Hi everyone, welcome to the Superhuman Switch, a mind-body business empowering podcast of high achievers guaranteed to switch your superhuman levels on. I'm your host, Saf. Today I'm joined with Nelio Leone. Nelio is the founder and the CEO of Urban Monks, a growth marketing agency here in Dubai. Nelio has more than 10 years growth marketing experience. He was one of the first 30 employees of Careem as the director of brands before Uber acquired Careem in 2020. Also, he played a significant role in big brands like Washman, L'Oreal, and Chanel. We are going to explore his passion for this space and how he's taking care of himself while maintaining a balanced lifestyle. Nelio, a pleasure to have you here, man.
Thank you for having me. Let's do it.
Awesome. First, six languages.
Yes.
Which one do you prefer to start with?
Whichever you want. Like, we can switch between language. We can, like, you know, alternate, switch, whatever you want.
Sweet. First of all, I don't know why I had this impression, because I've been following you for a while, that you're from Brazil. So I'm sincere apologies.
No problem.
You're from Italy. So Nelio, before we start, I know that you have really impressive footprint when it comes to the marketing and your journey. I've been following it on LinkedIn through my close friends. I'm really interested to know more who's Nelio and why marketing, I would say.
Perfect. Yeah, I think it's a great question. So who's Nelio? Let's start from that.
Let's do it.
So as you said, like I always had like a real knack for marketing. And I knew it from very, very early age. And it's not just marketing. It's not like corporate marketing. It really has like this really weird kind of component between marketing and entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. That's really where I find my edge. That's where I find like my sweet spot where I feel at home. And I'll tell you like a story, right? So I was, I think like 18 years old. We just graduated from high school. And all my friends, you know, everybody goes crazy for the end of like high school. And we decided to take a trip. Mm-hmm. It was like, I think 2004 or something like this, 2003. And so we decided to take like our first trip alone to Greece. So we literally went from Italy, three friends, backpack, and we just hop on a boat and we go all the way to Greece.
Okay.
And funny thing, the first day we arrived there, we don't know where to sleep. We find a place. Finally, everything was perfect. And I was like literally unlocking my backpack. I realized that I couldn't find my wallet.
Damn.
And we were supposed to stay there for like 2 weeks and a half.
Okay.
So like almost 3 weeks. And I was like, man, how am I going to do this? Like, I don't have any cash on me. And this is like really looks complicated. So, and back then, I mean, that's 2003, 2004, so mm-hmm. that doesn't make me younger. But but my parents were traveling in Argentina.
Okay.
And back then, there was, like, no PayPal or, like, everything had to happen through
cash,
bank
yeah.
and cash and whatnot. And internet was not internet as we know it today, where you
yeah.
can just take your iPhone and, I don't know, like... Like, you know, just
swipe it, tap it.
Swipe it, tap it, and you can get your parents. So I literally send them an email, send them a text first, then send them an email. But anyways, I was like literally stuck. So what happened? My friends were like, man, we don't worry about it. I'll just ask my parents to spot me and I'll give you an advance and you'll pay us back. But I knew that it was not doable for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That it would not, like, you know, I could not sustain myself for 2 weeks and a half always asking my friends, hey, can you give me like $50? I just like, I don't know to
it's buy. It's a nightmare, man.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So the next thing I did, I went to this place, which was like a small rooftop bar, very cozy. And they were looking for like a waiter.
Okay.
And I told them, listen, I'm not really good as a waiter, but what I can do, I can promote your sunset rooftop bar just by standing in front of it and just bringing you people in.
Nice.
And they say, how are you going to do that? And I told them literally, well, I speak different languages, so I can pretty much talk to anyone. And anyways, I'm a fun guy. Like, you know, I can crack joke with people. And you don't have to pay me salary. You just have to pay me €1 per person that I bring in.
No way.
And the guy, so for the owner, it was like pretty much a good deal. It's like, exactly. Okay, if you don't bring me anyone, anyways, like his ROI on me bringing in one person for just €1, like what? Like the average order value in
did you check their menus before you decide this price?
No, I didn't. I mean, it was just like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, so basically, last thing I knew, I was like literally like filling their sunset rooftop from 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. And basically, I was making like $300 to $500 a night.
Wow.
And what happened with that is that because I was on the island and the island was getting full, mm-hmm. all the hotels, all the like backpackers' places, all the cheap places where like, you know, students would go.
Hostels
and yeah. whatnot was getting like jam-packed. Like the island was full. So I would see like a lot of like Australian people, whatever, coming with these backpacks. Asking me, hey, do you know where we can sleep? Because we don't know. And we actually, me and my friends, got like a very old house from this old man that was not very energetic to like to rent and whatnot. So I told the old man, listen, give me the full house for the full month.
Okay.
And I'll just pay you by week. So I can't pay you like a full front month, but per week I'm gonna pay you. And then the rest, just I'll figure it out. So then what happened is that literally the island was full. I was on the street from 5:30, 6 until like 12 a.m. So then I would tell these guys that were like just...
Desperate to find a place.
Yeah, desperate to find a place.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys need a place. We've got you covered.
Mm-hmm.
And so we call that, we call it like the Zios hostel because it was on the island of Ios. Yeah. And Zio in English, in Italian, is like uncle. So, and because like the guy was like a very old uncle, so we said like, you know, this is the hostel of the...
That's a nice twist.
And so what happened at the end of the day is that I literally had $500 a night plus like real estate, sort of like...
Yeah, agent.
Exactly, because I was subletting those beds. I would pay them for €6 a night. And I was subletting at the same time for like €50 a night.
Yeah.
And we were like constantly full because we're like on full season. The island was actually full. And then on top of that, also by the time I would finish working my shift between 6 to 12 a.m., then I would go from bars to bar. I would meet like a lot of people mm-hmm. and I would make like huge groups so that by the time I was finished with that, we would go from bar to bar. And I, because I had a big group, I would take a commission from every bar I would go in based on how many people I would bring.
You are a genius entrepreneur.
And so what happened, like, I literally arrived broke on the island. I actually ended up extending my stay for the whole summer. And I came back home around, like, with something like around $10,000.
Amazing.
And that was, like, really, that's where I understood that, okay, entrepreneurship itself is maybe not just my thing, but it's, like, this weird intersection that I'm still trying to identify, like clearly identify, between marketing and entrepreneurship. This is where I really find my vibe.
I love the story. And the funny part that because of this incident, this kind of like, I wouldn't say desperate, but you have to figure out a solution. And all these options open up from a promoter to an agent to a guide. Man, you are a businessman in nature.
That's it.
So the sweet spot, and again, because I'm familiar with you from a different perspective about your marketing capability, but I noticed based on your engagement that you have this kind of like business mindset. And this is exactly the sweet. So I don't think you need to figure it out. It's obvious because I think we both know that this is what required in these days. You cannot be only a salesman or a businessman or only a marketeer. It doesn't make any sense. But the naming, traditionally, or you are either marketeer.
Yes, or exactly. So I agree with you. Yeah. I completely agree with you. Especially now with all the tools that we're empowered with. And I think it's just, yeah, I think you can't just be one.
Absolutely. Sure. I agree with you. These all terms like director or brand manager or even now entrepreneur or solopreneur, all of this, it doesn't make any sense. You have to put multiple hats. But again, the dynamics are changing. And after that, you discovered yourself. But how you became more focusing on, did you focus on certain direction when it comes to the business side of things? Did you go back to the island? Because it seems that it's
yes, 100%. Every year, almost.
So yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I went broke. I came back for it. So how many years you stayed on this island?
So actually then, for all my college period, I would go there every single summer. Because anyways, sweet. I cracked a playbook, a formula. I would use the same.
And you have the network and you have everything.
Exactly. And I would go to the same place. Same exact setup, and I would make like very good money. And you know, for a college student, it was just great because I would finish my exams, let's say around like May, June, and then I would be literally on the island until like September, like you know, mid September
before the high school contact.
Before the college would start in, and it was great because then every month, like every summer, I would like you know make enough money for me to be, you know, very independent and happy for like the full year. So yeah, it was great.
I love the story. And again, it's like when you ask the question, what's your passion or how's passion? It makes full sense. It's like you were in the position that forced you to come up with these ideas. And you figured out that this is basically what I enjoy. And let's carry on. So you moved to Dubai, I think, in 2013, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So let's maybe we can shed the light here because you work with corporate, with big brands, and then you move totally to the startup.
Yeah.
Is that was an itch?
Yes, it's very interesting how the transition went because so for some reason, I don't know why, like when I moved to France, when I moved to Paris, things went like kind of automatically into corporates because the French culture, or I don't know if it's the French culture, it was like my college or my university there, they would pretty much like really tell you, no, after university, you need to get into like an internship that makes sense, like a big brand or something that has a name. You need
traditional
to
way.
Yes, exactly. Mm. So you need to build your name. So we were kind of like really hardwired this way.
True.
I kind of had to. So I started with like very big brands in Paris, in the headquarters, back at Chanel, then did L'Oreal for many years. But I knew that I was like never comfortable. Mm-hmm. I always like, you know, people say that startups are stressful or that entrepreneurship is stressful, but I was never as stressed as I was in corporate, because I felt that was actually the most volatile and dangerous environment and the least predictable, at least for me. In which sense? Why as an entrepreneur, I never had any sleepless night, and in corporate, I literally could never sleep properly.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that I always felt this kind of stress that my future had a gatekeeper, and my gatekeeper would be my boss, or anyways, there was like always a higher decision maker that had the key to my destiny. I was not fully owner, like I did not fully own my destiny. I did not fully own my potential. If one day I had like a boss that would like consider me a complete failure, I would be a failure. And the next day, if you had a boss or if you had like, I don't know, like a team lead or whatever that considers you a superstar, then you're a superstar.
Yeah.
And so that like for me was extremely hard to navigate because I felt I was just literally like I was literally renting my salary. Mm-hmm. I was not producing my salary. I was renting a position that gave you a salary. And that gave like that for me came with a lot of stress. For one reason, it's because, well, what if at some point, you know, you just turn in a bad moment in the corporate or in your team or with your boss, and then you don't own that salary anymore and you can't really have any side hustles? Because let's face it, at least, you know, the corporate jobs that I've seen, that I've witnessed, were not 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
Were like much more intense. So you couldn't have time possibly to build like a side income or something that would support you.
True that.
So I always felt I didn't have like any safety net and that things did not depend entirely on myself.
Yeah.
But so, and plus, you know, I've always been really bad with politics.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike not necessarily reading people. Reading people, I consider myself really good at.
Obviously.
But the problem, I'm not really good at, chewing my words before, really filtering what I have to say and to who I have to say.
Politically correct.
Politically correct. This is like something I really struggle with because I'm more like more impulsive, more like head on. Let's do it. And it's very hard for me to navigate
the corporate environment.
So for me it was very stressful, and but I navigated like pretty decently. Like I don't think that stress really showed externally because in fact I had like a pretty like fast career.
Yeah,
I was blessed because in L'Oréal, for instance, I was in the headquarters from the international team. They put me on the emerging markets. The emerging markets, I was focused on LATAM, Latin America.
Yeah.
And Middle East and Africa. And then at some point, those two regions kind of like, before they were merged, then they were like separated. And then I was appointed just with managing director of the Middle East and Africa region to really oversee all the subsidiaries in Middle East and Africa. As like pretty much after, 4 years of career, which in L'Oréal, it's like very rare. Like it takes much more time to do this kind of job. And I was traveling in like different subsidiaries.
It's a big region, by the way, and the Middle East.
Exactly. So I was focused then only on the Middle East, and that's how I kind of get the gist of the region. Got like very good relationship with the GMs of the subsidiaries, with the marketing directors, and then at some point, what happened is that on a very specific division. My boss back then, he told me literally like, Nerio, we need someone to go to Saudi Arabia to really like structure.
What year was that?
2012.
Okay.
So that's when I moved to Saudi Arabia, stayed there for 2 years, lived in Jeddah, Duwar al-Qabda.
Aywa.
There you go. And literally it was like a dream job. Because I was like far away from the headquarters where like there was all this like really political tension. Political tension was like really thick there, you know?
Subsidiaries are less kind of.
Whereas subsidiary in Saudi, I was like literally feeling that.
And everything is growing.
Exactly. That that entrepreneurial energy back after 4 or 5 years of career, that was great for me. Amazing. I felt it was like literally.
Exponential
like
growth.
Fresh air, exponential growth. And so for like 2 years, I was charged to really build a playbook for art, for this specific division in L'Oréal on how to crack the Saudi market.
Mm.
And it was a lot of fun because then I used to like travel in the most remote areas, talk to the most remote distributors, understand their mindset, understand like it was like really very exotic for me, right?
Yeah,
because... imagine, right?
I've been there, I've done that, and I love the challenge there, of course, with the complexity of their ecosystem. But I feel you. It's like how things became more interesting because the execution level is faster.
Yeah.
And they're receptive to these kind of new brands and new ideas to be in the market.
Exactly. And at some point, it felt so great because it really felt like playing a video game. Like literally,
okay.
Because you would go from
this
idea.
It's different than the island, huh?
Imagine. But yeah, but that was kind of the same vibe. Entrepreneurship and marketing. That it's again,
the same.
Came
different
back.
Context, different dynamics.
Exactly. Yeah. Different context. I was like on a corporate suit. I was like dressed all super like snazzy and very like L'Oréal
Italian kind.
Italian, yeah, Italian like cut tie with like really cool Amazing. Sunglasses, going to talk to distributors.
Yeah.
But it was the same energy, same. Mm. Same sweet spot. Worked extremely well. And after 2 years there, they were like, okay, now you have to come back to Paris because then otherwise the other option would be to like stay here. But like here in Dubai, there was no position that would really match the career path I was on.
True.
And that's when I met I just randomly went to a conference of startups in here in Dubai. And that's when I heard the Kareem founders speak. And they were like literally... Back then, they were like, it was just starting. It was like literally Kareem was like this kind of like weird sort of Uber, but the poor
Arabized
style. The peasants, of Uber, like it was like kind of like, yeah, you know, it was
Uber. All of us, we had this impression, by the way, when they started.
Everybody, right? Everybody. So
even from the user side, like,
yeah, it's like, yeah, this Kareem thing.
Yeah, and we're expecting Uber to be in the market, but it's, it got delayed. So
yeah, exactly.
It was a smart thing.
So that's why, you know, they're so, and that's why. So, but when I, and that's the perception I had as well, right? Mm-hmm. But then when I heard the founders speaking, the founder actually Mudassir was speaking at this like small conference. I was like, man, I was like impressed. I was like, these guys are really onto something. This is not just like a ride-hailing app. This is like a movement mm-hmm. they're building. And I want to be there. Also because I also felt, I don't know about you, how you navigated those years there, but I felt I was missing like the digital train.
Yeah.
Because I was like in this corporate world where we were just starting to talk to influencers on YouTube because it was Saudi, and Saudi, like, the penetration was huge. But
true.
But otherwise, from headquarters, like, the digital team was, like,
very small business unit. No one cares. Exactly. Still focusing on the retail side and distributors. It was way behind.
So I was like, man, this could be actually the great thing to, again, do entrepreneurship and marketing at the next level.
Yeah.
Actually learn from entrepreneurs that are building this. And plus, you know, when you look at the pedigrees and the background of everybody involved at Kareem back then, even in the early days, all ex-Stanford, ex-McKinsey, ex-that. I was like, man, I'm going to be probably the dumbest in the room there.
Yeah.
So let's go. Bring it on.
It's a challenge. Let's take it.
Yeah. And
I've been in the island with no wallets.
So. That's it. So what else can scare me? Right?
Exactly.
And so that's what I did. I joined Kareem as one of the first marketeers, like mm-hmm. what was their first marketing director. And then, you know, we went from there. We went from like being what I think like around maybe like 30 people in total to we scaled it to 3,500. And then I left just before the Uber acquisition. And that's where I really put my marketing capability to test, because then it was like no budget, very target oriented.
Yeah.
First time I was exposed to like proper performance marketing. Like all these things for me were new back then, right? Mm-hmm. So, it was great. It was great because, again, like so many smart people, especially in the early days, when I first joined, like people were on another level.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would look left and right, and basically everyone had achieved crazy things in their 20s.
Yeah.
So these were not like faint of heart people. They were like all people that really
put did all their heart and sweat behind it.
Into something at least.
Yeah.
And I think that was like the great, the secret sauce of Kareem, to be honest. Because that's where, and I think that is where Mudassir and Magnus and whatnot, like the founders, they took it from their background, I assume, right, at McKinsey. Because McKinsey, they also have like a very strict policy on who they hire. So they always hire people that have like really very interesting and diverse
strong consultancy companies. They have this strict criteria how to select the profile.
So that was me at Kareem from 2013 to 2014 to 2017. And then what happened at Kareem, though, that was completely weird for me, because like for us back then, Kareem was like the sort of baby that we're like, let's literally make this baby fly.
Yeah.
We were all like really deeply engraved and deeply wired into, like, we're super mission driven.
As you mentioned, it was a movement. And surprisingly, everyone I know that used to work there, they have the same sense and they have the same description about how they joined and how they were like all pushing forward to it. Of course, it reached an interesting milestone for the whole region, but I can sense that it's something that you were passionate about it.
100%.
Yeah.
We would eat, sleep, repeat Kareem to the point of exhausting ourselves.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, after 2 years after several years that I spent there, I literally completely burnt out. I had like the first burnout experience in my whole life, and I didn't even see it coming.
Okay.
And coming back to actually the theme of your podcast, I think, which is actually great because it's important to achieve, overachieve. This is like super cool, but not to the point where you can actually harm yourself.
Yeah.
And burnout is real. Mental health is real. I literally went in the thick of it without even realizing. It was so slow, and I kept ignoring the symptoms until I was literally unable to operate.
Wow.
And it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, at the end of the day, us as humans, we're as good as, like, our function, our brain functions to operate. And once your brain gives you the finger and tells you, like, man, I'm not operating anymore, then it's a problem. It's a real problem. And the first time I faced that, it was extremely scary. Extremely scary.
Take me through it. I'm interested to know.
Perfect. So I think, like, we at Careem, we operated like super high speed and always at high intensity and high adrenaline. So the whole organization was driven by adrenaline, was driven by speed, was driven by passion. So it was actually very positive.
Mm-hmm.
So once you would come in from the outside, you would feel this like great energy.
True.
Because this energy was real. However, this energy came as well with some shadows. Mm-hmm. And those shadows were long days at work. You start neglecting your health. You start neglecting your sleep. You start neglecting the way you eat.
Mm-hmm.
You start drinking too much caffeine. And then also there's so many management shifts and shifts within the company.
It's all fluid.
It's all fluid all the time that you're always like in fight and flight mode.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that at the beginning, I kept on like pushing through it, especially because we were relaunching the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like really focused on the Wink, right? So before it was not a Wink, we are the team behind the Wink. So every time you see the Wink...
What a nice twist.
You know exactly. Like how this happened. Basically, it was so intense that at the beginning I started having these things where basically at night I would just like literally wake up randomly.
Mm-hmm.
So work very hard throughout the day. Then, you know, you go back home, had dinner, tried to sleep. And then at some point I would just like wake up and with cold sweat. And then I was like, okay, whatever. And then I was so dumb that I would actually ignore them and say, okay, anyways, I'm up now. I'm going to go back to work.
Yeah.
So started working again, push it through. And then those insomnia started coming in more and more and more and more to the point where I would go like a week with sleeping probably 1, 2, 3 nights.
Wow. Sleep deprived, like.
Sleep deprived to the next level.
Wow.
And then pushing through coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And then that built up over like 7 months. And at some point, like my brain started snapping. I was like, I literally found myself like, I don't know, walking, and then I just started like feeling that I had like some sort of like serious illness. And I was so sure that I had some serious illness because every time I would breathe, mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, my lungs were not responding.
Yeah.
That I started going to all sort of doctors, and doctors like, man, you're totally fine. And that drove me even more crazy because it was like, how am I fine? I feel like I'm going to die now. I feel like, I don't know, I was going to have like a heart attack or something.
Click the mental.
And they were like, and then actually, thank God. So that actually then led me to different doctors. And then I met this like really great lady that she said like, Nelio, this is not, you're not having a heart attack. You don't have lung cancer. Because I was convinced, right? I was like very stressed about it.
Okay.
And she said, this is not that. This is like literally you're just having like major, major anxiety, major panic attacks.
Wow.
And I was like, what is that? And so she tried to like walk me through the things like, hey, when you get sleep deprived, she like did some blood tests. You see like your, basically she explained me the brain works on like 3 different.
Frequencies, like levels.
Frequencies, but 3 different molecules.
Okay.
Let's call them. I don't remember the exact word. I'm not a scientist. Right. But basically like what she was saying is that, okay, there is this molecule whose job is basically for you to be fired up and to climb the mountain.
Yeah.
It's like adrenaline or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. So this, that's her job. The concentration of this type of molecule in your brain now is extremely high. Okay? This other molecule is for you to relax.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's for you to like sleep, slow down, etc. And then there's this other molecule that it's basically for you to like, where basically, I don't remember the exact function, but whatever, like these three molecules, they were all like the two that were used to like recover my brain were in deep red. And this one was like shooting almost up all high. The time. So that created like a super bad viral loop, like a super loop.
You're not recovering mentally, physically. You're not recovering. Physically.
And as soon as you're tired, well, what happened in my brain is that instead of like feeding the ones that should support you and get back to the thing, it would actually spike up back the adrenaline. So the more tired I would get, the more adrenaline I would, it would spike for me to climb still the mountain.
Yes, it's,
And that led me to like a complete crash. So I had to quit Kareem because of that, because I was like, I was literally like, for me, it was
losing it.
I was losing it. I was like, no, I you know, this is not only becoming unhealthy, this is like becoming dangerous.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And you can like literally, that's what, you know, after spending time with this doctor, she told me like, literally you if you continue this path, you may fry your brain literally. And that can lead down the road to dementia and like to a lot of like really bad stuff. Yeah. So you need to like stop this, or you need to find a solution. You need to address this. You can't keep it going like this. And so it's actually took me like 2 years to recover fully.
Okay.
Very, very tough. 2 years to recover fully, to not have the sensation that like I had to back again, convince myself that I was not having like stroke, I was not having lung cancer, but that was like this sort of really weird thing that was happening in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with time, with like really re-educating my brain to sleep, re-educating my brain to rebalance, then I was completely on again. But yeah, it took me like literally like a year, maybe like not 2 years, but maybe like good 18 months.
I'm shocked actually, because again, regardless the symptoms that you were not aware of, that you reach a point that it's becoming not even mental. It might have a biological impact, of course. It might lead to a heart attack or, for God's sake, anything more critical.
Yeah.
But the point is that you decided to quit instead of finding another solution, because you were thriving and you were basically working with this organization, and the best option is to step out of it. But this is the interesting part, that this is one of the points we discussed, that what's the best way, instead of me quitting, how to maintain a balanced lifestyle? I know the environment of the startup is challenging. Yeah, I totally understand.
Like the thing also back then, Kareem was going through like this really radical change, mm-hmm. between like from a startup to like an actual corporate. We started raising like a lot of money. Big investors would come in.
Mm.
So even for me, I just realized that, you know, resisting and just being there, like in a place that I couldn't, you know, recognize anymore. Although we built it from nothing,
mm-hmm.
Then I felt like, you know, it was not just my place anymore to be in.
Yeah.
And it's normal, it's natural.
That's okay.
As an organization grow,
yeah.
There's team for every season. I was definitely part, and that is also like a pattern that I've seen over and over. You're always gonna find me part of the team in the season that is about to launch, that is about to go through the L curve.
Yeah.
Once we reach a certain thing and it's more like about maintaining, or it's more about
sustaining growth,
etc., then you're not going to find me there anymore. Mm-hmm. I am literally the guy that is going to thrive in a team that is really working hands in hands all together for the takeoff.
Yeah, I liked, you picked your own type of battles, I would say.
That's it.
And after a bit, I think it's a courageous step to move from Kareem, just to avoid this kind of like burnouts leading to these weird things, which I totally feel with you. How is your lifestyle now? Because now you're having your own agency, which is impressive.
Yeah.
But with that, of course, you have the stress levels, I assume, as an owner. And we all know that you will be your best or the worst boss to keep it running, correct? But how's your lifestyle before we jump into the how it's going now? But at least, how are you taking care of yourself to sustain this?
So it's very simple. I actually went through both paths, right? So one was I did the same mistake again of like working myself to the bone. Literally, you know, saying, okay, I got this. I need more exposure. I need to do this. I need to do that. And I realized that it was not sustainable again. And with that in mind, also once you get so once life gives you a really tough lesson, you kind of like you kind of like really are very careful on the steps you take.
Yes.
And that's why, to be honest, there's a lot of people that ask me, hey, why didn't you start your own startup? Why didn't you get like investment from VCs and start your own startup? It's simply because I feel there is nothing better than service business to start in your entrepreneurship
journey. Yeah.
Because you don't know you don't owe anything to anyone. It's your capital. It's your expertise. You can scale it up. You can scale it down the way you want. You can turn it into a lifestyle business if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn it into a huge business if you want.
Yeah.
And I find like a lot of people sort of criticize the choice of like going through the service business route, whereas I think it's like a great business to really make sure that you have everything you need in terms of ingredients for both life and work. It's service businesses are by nature very resilient.
Yeah.
You can adapt. You can
highly change, dependent.
Highly independent. Mm. Change pricing according to market dynamics. You don't have investors. Like generally, if you stick to a certain revenue, you don't need to have like enormous amount of stuff. We're 12 people in total.
Yeah, become more efficient and effective in the same
more
time.
More efficient, more effective. So I think like service businesses are actually great for people that have like either low risk tolerance, saying that, you know, you don't want to take like a huge risk into a startup, or just like myself, where you don't want to take a huge risk on your health.
Mm-hmm.
And because I went through that path once, I was like, okay, what can I do to have both of the best world, which is the independence of an entrepreneur without like the extreme high pressure that comes with it. Now, agency, there is pressure with clients.
Yeah.
But once you build systems and you build SOPs, and we've been around for like 4 years, so we have like killer SOPs, killer systems to avoid getting wiped out. Mm-hmm. And we're like know exactly what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and who has to do what.
Automation and systemization.
Automation and system, like and being so systemized has helped us reduce the amount of like mental workload to the extent that, to be honest, right now the agency, for me, it's a happy place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a place that I live with stress. I even allow myself once or even twice per week to just like go and exercise from when I just like, you know, when my kids go back napping, like at 9:30 until like 11:30.
Okay.
I can go to the gym twice a week and then twice during the weekend. I really have that flexibility that comes with owning an agency, that if I had any other business, it would be like, it would be more like a bit more difficult to manage.
I love this. And recently I was reading it's not a new concept. It's called lifestyle businesses. And we're basically exactly what the way you described it, that there is no pressure from external forces, especially now with the hype of the startup and the VC and everything. And I wouldn't say luckily, but now this downfall exposed a lot of things. So I became more really interested to discover this space more. But again, I remember when you were more engaged on the LinkedIn and your content, something that drew my attention. And actually, I was inspired with some of your posts about the founder positioning or his presence. Not startup, of course, even in any type of like businesses. And there is a couple of like discussions, and I bounced on one of your posts about how you put yourself as the founder or the not startup founders, but as a business owner. Where are you in that journey? Because I know that you went silent because amazingly now you have twins, which is amazing. So I totally, now I understand where is Nelio, how the founder can be the representative of the brand.
100%. So think about it. Think about it in this way, right? When you start a company, you're on a mission,
mm-hmm.
and your role as a founder is very critical in selling this vision.
Yeah.
In selling this mission. In selling this vision. Who do you have to sell it to? You have to sell it to your potential employees for them to join you and be excited to join you in this journey. You have to sell it to investors if you need investors. You have to sell it to customers because you need to have customers on board. Otherwise, you don't have a business.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sell it to suppliers as well. So like the founder is the ultimate owner of the vision of the company. Now, if a founder is not very vocal on social media and does not really reflect that vision and mission on a daily basis out there, who's going to tell the story?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to tell the story? Yes, you can tell it internally. You can be silent about it. You can be like more inwardly focused.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think a lot of great founders out there that I follow and that I see, they actually document their journey on LinkedIn. And this is exactly what I have been doing for the last couple of years. Now, I took a backseat for the last 7 months. But the idea for me from day one was really to document the journey and share with everyone what I was just learning and share with everyone, like really this like really energy that drives me to do things.
Yeah.
And why? Because at the end of the day, being a founder is also very lonely as a journey in general. People tend to think that, I don't know, people that are maybe not founders, they tend to think that you're always like surrounded with people and it's like, but it's actually very lonely up there.
True.
And it's very lonely for one reason, because you cannot share all your fears, all your doubts, all your thoughts with everyone,
mm-hmm.
because you own a responsibility. If, I don't know, I'm like freaking out because my company is about to shut down, I can't possibly tell my employees about it, because then they're going to freak out and True. Then everybody's going to freak out. And then so you're responsible for also the type of messages that you relay out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you are, I don't know, tense about like your quarterly financials, you can't go to your investors and just like panic and freak out. It's like, oh my God, we're not going to make it this. Like, it's not going to work.
True.
Like, you need to build a perspective for that not to happen. And then if it is about to happen, you need to warn people. But you can't really go out there and just like, you know. So instead of like communicating on that, what's very important for a founder is to really share that raw energy that pushed you to get out of your comfort zone and start something that really mattered at least to you. Because if it mattered to you, it means that it pinched you in that deep energy, that deep thing that you wanted to build, that you wanted to see in this world. And you need to sort of like doing a Batman sign,
mm-hmm.
so that other people that connect with that same energy will connect with you and will walk the journey with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really nice principle. And again, something that I'm really diving into understand this. And you triggered this really interesting point. And now I'm following an interesting framework, which is it's based like a 5P, which is the key person of influence, where it's structured in that manner. The first P is the pitch, where you have an idea or a mission that you believe in and you can pitch around your idea about it. The second P is basically to be a content prolific content creator, regardless what platform and the social media or any kind of another medium. The third P, which is the product or service, regardless what's the format. The fourth P is to be more present, digital, online, offline, participating in speaking events. And the last P, which is partnership. And this framework is basically, you should follow it in that structure.
So again, the 5P, I'm like...
Yeah,
so.
We can also explain it to you in more structure. Also, I can share it with you, which is the first P is the pitch.
Yeah.
The second P is to be prolific in content creation.
Okay.
The third P is product or service. The fourth P is being present, online, offline. And the five P is partnership.
Yeah.
And it follows that structure, which is quite impressive. I'll share with you.
I love it. I'll take note of that. Thank you, Saf. I'm learning a lot here.
I will share even the book by Daniel Priestley. He's a really interesting guy. And it makes full sense because what you just mentioned and all what we do are basically in a scattered way. But if we follow it in that structure, it makes full sense. Of course, it can evolve and improve. But the whole concept, just if you follow it, it makes full sense.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's the book is called Key Person of Influence. It's really impressive.
Key Person of Influence.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy, no worries.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's something that you drew to my attention when we basically you shared your ideas on LinkedIn. But I really look forward to see you back, man. I've been like really following your content, and I'm sure that you have a lot of knowledge you can share. But what's next for you now?
So what's next for me now? Now, really grateful to have like a great partner on board with our agency. We see it growing to a certain revenue mark that we're targeting, and then the idea would be to start being more focused into product launches.
Okay.
So the idea is that service business is amazing. It's amazing because again, it really allows you to have like a great lifestyle. It's amazing. But then after a while, and I've been in this now for the last, 3 years, it becomes like just any other business.
Yeah.
Then at some point you need like to have other pockets of growth. So we found ourselves, just in front of a proper decision tree. And we're like, okay, where do we want to go from here?
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to build like the next big growth marketing agency, in the Middle East, and now going for accounts like everywhere and started like, you know, having like, you know, 100 of or like 80, 50 accounts on file every month.
Yeah.
Do we want to do that? And do we want to become like, you know, like a bigger agency, increase pricing and whatnot? Or do we want to keep it like a small boutique agency, but then reinvest some of that energy into product building?
Okay.
And then that's like that. This is the question where we're at right now. I think we're not really 100% ready to go the product building route because we need to get to a specific financial threshold that in order for us then to super comfortably move to product, salaries are paid, we make profit out of the agency. The agency becomes like more of an asset that delivers, makes client happy, get clients on board. We're always still very much involved into that.
Yeah.
And then we start building like a small structure, which is a lab. And that lab is focused on building e-commerce products,
mm-hmm.
Mainly like into lifestyle category.
Love it.
So this is like what's next for us. And because I realized like, okay, what I'm really good at, personally, I'm really good at building brand. I'm really good at building content. I'm really good at building community. And my partner, he's very good at operations.
Mm-hmm.
So with that kind of skill set, we could literally build with the team that we have right now. We could dedicate part of that team to building brands, building small brands that are very high value. That they have like a really deep soul and test the market and see where we go.
That's impressive. And I wish you all the best, tell you.
Yeah, let's hope it works. I don't know, I'll let you know in like a year
or
something.
I have no doubt for someone who lost his wallet and came back from the island rich. I have zero doubts. So I seriously wish you all the best. And I really look forward to see you back on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Sharing your content. And I really enjoyed this conversation.
Same here.
I really appreciate your time too. So thank you everyone for tuning in. And again, thank you very much for reaching out with the feedback and comments. A special thanks for my son who's helping me on the podcast production. If you want to support the show, you can share, you can review. We are on your favorite podcast apps and a YouTube channel. Superhuman Switch, get your switch on.
Let's go.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your
time. Thank you.